Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Connor Orr. We have some week six action in the NFL to talk about. Connor and I will basically become one and take you through all these games. Well, that doesn't sound good.
You know what? It's all about cohesion. You know, it's about developing the it's about developing the QB wide receiver relationship. So I'm all for it.
All right. The way we're gonna do this, we're gonna skip the mini mailbag for a week, just for a week. Send those questions in if you still have them. Talkback@themmqb.com. But we're just gonna take a trip through all the Sunday games and the Monday nighter, and let's just get right to it here. Sunday Night Football is kind of a downer this week, so we're gonna start with 49ers Rams here. I think that is, we can all agree, the headliner at this point, to get the undefeated 49ers visiting the Rams. And Robert Saleh is doing some stuff there with that defense. Robert Saleh, who will be, he's going to be someone's head coach next year.
Yeah.
But he's, between this pass rush, this seriously upgraded pass rush, and we all saw what Nick Bosa did on Monday night, this pass rush, Saleh's sort of little wrinkles and twists with that Seahawks-style defense combined with the Rams' offensive line issues. I mean, is this the year that the 49ers finally get the best of one of these McVay teams?
I think so, because not only have you seen sort of the blueprint for playing a McVay team in general, but it also plays into the 49ers' strengths really well. Like up front, they're really good from sideline to sideline. They can shut down a lot of those kind of lateral runs and lateral movements and stuff like that. And you're right about Rob Saleh. I mean, you know, you think about a guy that's kind of mastered that cover three defense, which is the most effective thing in general against some of the new offenses that we're seeing in the league. And then when you lock him in a room with Kyle Shanahan, who's the best play caller in football, or maybe the second best play caller in football, those wrinkles just sort of start to develop over time organically. And I think he might be running that defense better than any of the guys who kind of originally architected that defense, you know, Pete Carroll, certainly Dan Quinn right now, Gus Bradley. So I think it's a really interesting thing that we're seeing right now. Obviously, you're aided by five first-round draft picks up front, too. That helps.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's definitely something to be said for, I mean, look, that Seahawks-style defense, the cover three stuff, the advantage of it is it's relatively simple, and therefore you can play fast. And he seems to have just found that perfect mix of adding enough complexity to it without slowing down his defense. I mean, Quan Alexander, who I was skeptical of when they brought him in this offseason, Quan Alexander looks like an absolute star.
Yeah, I mean, when they free him up like that to go after the pass rusher like they did against Cleveland, you know, just allowing him to sort of play a little bit freer than he did in Tampa Bay, you just get to milk all the goodness out of that athleticism, right? I mean, that's what you really wanted him for in the first place. And so I think you have that luxury when you have good pieces on the back end and good pieces up front, and then everything else is layering, right? And then it just makes you look like a genius because you're hitting on all the other guys.
So if you throw out the meaningless regular season finale in 2017 when the Rams sat everyone because they didn't have any reason to play anyone. These three matchups, these McVay versus Saleh matchups here, the Rams have put up 41, 39, and 48. And you look at what the Rams did the last 2 weeks, back-to-back losses, of course. They did put up points and yards for really the first time this year. Now, part of that was the fact that they were playing from behind. Like in Tampa, they were, it seemed like they were down two scores immediately. They end up rolling, it was some empty calories. It was 490 passing yards, net passing yards, I should say. But obviously, it wasn't enough to win that one. And then you saw in Seattle, you know, maybe we're treating this a little bit differently if Greg Zuerlein makes a 44-yard kick at the end of regulation there, and then we say, wow, they went up to Seattle and stole a game on a short week. But I guess it's trending in the right direction. I just don't feel like we're going to see the 2018-2017 version of this Rams offense, because I just don't know if they're getting better on that interior line.
No, and I do think that there's a catch-up factor there. I mean, you know, you can see some of the screenshots of teams playing an almost identical sort of front that the Patriots played in the Super Bowl, and that's been almost a constant throughout the year. And I'm not saying that that's the hard and fast blueprint there, but if you have good pieces up front and good pieces on the back end, that's a relatively simple thing to replicate. And if you look at the 49ers, what they can do personnel wise, they can do that and then some, because you go back to the Buccaneers game last week, they had a hard time with Shaq Barrett and a 34-year-old Ndamukong Suh. And you know, what are you going to do when you add Nick Bosa, who is maybe the best like pure bull rusher in the league right now? I mean, what he did last week against a very bad Browns offensive line was phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's I think you're the 49ers. Obviously, you're off to a great start. You're sitting there 4-0 on top of this division. It's not the end of the world if you don't win a game here in LA. It's a tough division road game, but I think you're pretty disappointed at this point because this one's ripe for the taking.
Yeah, I mean, these are the games that you have to win, I think, to assure yourself that this is going in the right direction. I mean, I'm not going to say that they haven't had quality wins this year, but, I mean, two of your wins are against the Ben Roethlisberger-less Steelers team in a totally spiraling, or maybe mini-spiraling Browns team. I don't know whether this is just a mini-spiral or a full spiral, but you can't have not have success there and not have it labeled at least somewhat of a spiral, given the expectations.
I was going to say, we'll get to the Browns in a moment. I don't know what to make of them. I will pose some questions, and Connor, you better have some answers. let's go with the Monday night game here. This is Lions at Packers. And look, Green Bay went to Dallas last week. It was the Aaron Jones show. I mean, Aaron Jones and the play of that offensive line was... I don't want to overstate it because they've had some good backs there in Green Bay, but that was the best run game performance I think I've ever seen from an Aaron Rodgers offense there in Green Bay.
Did he overlap at all with Amon Green or no?
That's a really good question.
It would have been like a late career Amon Green. I was going to say that was the best. He's been the best pure sort of factor causing running back that we've seen in Green Bay since Amon Green, and I don't think it's even close.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was almost ready to. They're still figuring it out with the passing game. It still just looks like Aaron Rodgers under Mike McCarthy there, and it is much more Aaron Rodgers than Matt LaFleur as far as that passing game goes at this point. And their running game just wasn't doing anything. And by the way, Amon Green did come back and play a year with Aaron Rodgers. Doesn't count, though. Doesn't count.
Just for no reason at all, I'm going to throw out my favorite Packers running back of the recent era. Do you remember the brief run of Sam Congato?
Oh my God, I loved Sam.
Wasn't
Congato.
He like in medical school and then he came back to play in the playoff
he
game
was,
or something like that?
He was doing, it was something like he was, it's like he wasn't in medical school, if I remember correctly, he wasn't in medical school, but he was like volunteering at a hospital, like he was doing like laundry and like custodial work.
Oh, okay.
And he might have eventually gone back to medical school, but it was something insane like that where it's like, it was longer than Jonas Gray, but he was a brief fantasy darling back then.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah, that was good. Those were good times. But yeah, I mean, I agree with your point that this is still super Rodgers heavy, right? I mean, you know, I think if you close your eyes and you didn't, you took out that whole massive passive aggressive middle finger war that him and Mike McCarthy had last year, and you open your eyes sometimes, you'd think, oh, it's the same offense. I mean, you know, it doesn't look that drastically different, even though it is. I mean, I understand that the bones of it are fundamentally different and it allows them to go a little bit faster, but Rodgers is still going to slow it down and make like an Aaron Rodgers throw just because he can, you know.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we'll see if Davante Adams is back in the lineup. We knew they were, and that was, I think, the most shocking part about Aaron Jones and what that run game did in Dallas against a really good Dallas defense. We knew they were shorthanded in the passing game, and they weren't going to be able to really get anything going, and they still just sort of, they imposed their will, and then on top of that, Aaron Jones is nifty. That's what I would call him. He is a nifty runner.
I think that's safe to say because it's not like on the magnanimous scale. It's not, you know, you're not over complimenting him. I think that's a proper way to couch his skill set right now.
he's not violent. He's not eye popping or anything like that. But he just sort of he so easily bounces some of these runs to the outside and breaks containment. And it's like, man, it's nifty.
Sort That's of a it. Paul Pierce type. You know, he's not going to blow you away with some sort of attribute, but he gets the job done, you know?
What's going to be interesting here is, look, this Lions offense looks so much better. I picked the Lions to win the Super Bowl and the Pro Bowl and multiple midterm elections last season.
Did you
and,
really?
They just, I didn't pick them to win the Super Bowl. They were my dark horse team, though. Okay. They were my, on the gambling podcast, when we were looking at the long shots going into the year, and they were something like 70-1. I was like, "Oh, come on, Matthew Stafford and this Lions team. If they get to January, like that's a dangerous team." And then they just, I don't know what that offense was last year. It was so much LeGarrette Blount. You just wanted to claw your eyes out. But this year, they got the downfield passing game going. We're seeing Kerryon Johnson. You got some J.D. McKissic, one of my favorites, yes. mixing in there now,
and the
rookie Ty Johnson. But they are attacking downfield, and it is multidimensional. It is it looks like a 2019 offense, unlike last year, and it is just I think they're dangerous, and I love this matchup against the Mike Pettine defense.
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting. Mike Pettine, I actually, you know, I put him on a list, and I received some flack for this, actually. I did a list of coaches and coordinators that I think are going to get some head coaching buzz there, and I think Mike Pettine is one of those rebound candidate guys. I mean, if you remember, he had the Browns in first place at some point before his GM got suspended for texting someone in the press box, and Johnny Manziel and the whole thing kind of melted down there. But, you know, I think what's interesting about both Daryl Bevel and Mike Pettine, who are facing off against each other, is they both had that critical gap year at the right time for coordinators where everything is evolving right now. And if you were able and you were financially secure enough to be able to take a season off and do what Daryl Bevel did and hang out with a bunch of smart offensive people and do what Mike Pettine did. I know he was down in LSU with Dave Aranda, who's sort of the godfather of stopping the RPO right now. Jim Leonard, a former pupil of his in Wisconsin. And so this is one of those matchups that I think is really going to be fascinating because they both have sort of a deeper Rolodex. There's more nuance to both of their systems. And you're right. I mean, I think that what Daryl Bevel is doing and just kind of elongating this and making them more multifaceted has been huge for them. And if you get someone like TJ Hockenson back into the fold and as more of a consistent sort of role player in this offense, I think they're going to be kind of dangerous, like borderline dangerous.
This is one they can steal here in Green Bay, and obviously that division is stacked, and it's sort of anyone's game still at this point. No shame in going on the road and losing a road game in this division, but this is one, especially after you let one get away against the Cardinals, and you had Mahomes dead to rights, and you let them steal one at home. Be nice for the Lions to get this one. And again, I love that Bevel versus Pettine matchup here because it's two guys. It's a league for the aggressors, and these are two guys who are aggressive and sort of forcing opponents to play on their terms.
Yeah, I mean that. You know, when you went back and you started looking at sort of the cause and effect of sort of some of these offensive explosions, it's like, what is the best counter to RPO and any of these things that are kind of helping them move the ball along better? And it's been simulated pressure. And Mike Pettine has been doing that since, you know, before it was cool, right? He was sort of the neutral milk hotel of simulated pressure, right? And now that it's super mainstream, he's definitely got more of a groove to it. And he's got the pieces in Green Bay, which I don't think, as good as his Jets defenses were, I don't think he's had this many sort of movable parts to make that work.
Yeah, but always remember, Connor, he wasted Johnny Manziel's prime. So
you let that neutral milk hotel reference just slip right by you, too.
I did. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I enjoyed it too thoroughly.
Just tried to hit you with it. So
just let it. Everyone, just take a second. Just let it linger a little bit. I'm sorry I stepped on it, Connor.
That's okay. I just thought, you know, I just wanted to make sure my microphone was working.
let's go Seahawks-Browns. Let's talk about that Browns offense because I think everyone was, I mean, what a whirlwind. Everyone was ready to write them off at 1-2. they go into Baltimore and just spank the Ravens, and everyone gets back on the bandwagon. They're leading the division after all that early season turmoil, and now it's going to be okay. And then they go out to San Francisco and just get, what did Richard Sherman say? We put our foot in their asses, or
that was
whatever.
A foot in the ass
some,
game. Yeah.
Some rude language, and I apologize to the many school children who listen to the show when they get a chance. But it's the offensive line. I mean, that's the question, the offensive line. And I do kind of wonder, you look at what the Ravens do, they're not stars in the pageant. You know, Matt Judon and Pernell McPhee, those are fine players, but those are not Nick Bosa types or Aaron Donald types. So it's almost like you can mentally, you can handle the pressure of all those overload blitzes that the Ravens do. But when it comes down to just a team with much better players going against your offensive line, like that's something they can't handle there. And I would think it would trend a little more toward the latter when you're talking about the Seahawks defensive line against this Browns offensive line.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But I just feel like whenever I talk about the Browns offense, it's standing on the table and saying it's too vertical right now. It's too vertical, and their offensive line is not good enough to handle it. And you know what it reminds me of? I finally found like a good like comparison to it. You ever watch the Charlie Brown Christmas special?
I have, but I don't know where this is going to
okay.
go.
You know when he's supposed to direct the play, and then and all of a sudden he says, like, okay, action, and then everyone just starts dancing in different directions, and like there's zero
yes.
cohesion.
Yep.
And so that's what it reminds me of. There was a play, I forget what quarter it was, against the 49ers, where Baker Mayfield was essentially being like suplexed in the backfield, and Odell Beckham is still like weaving like downfield, like doing this like double move, like he fully yeah. expects to get the ball on the other end. But I feel like, you know, you have guys like him and Jarvis Landry where just pull them back towards the line of scrimmage and you set up that vertical, right? You know, you have to attack them first and get Baker Mayfield comfortable, get the ball out of his hands, and then you go vertical like they did against the Jets. I mean, that's how they attacked that Greg Williams defense, and it was the one game that it sort of made sense to me, and all of a sudden they just sort of got away from that again against the best pass rush in football, and they got to clean that up before they face the Seahawks, or else it's going to be the same deal. And Baker, you can tell, is getting skittish, which is really, really
yes.
that, I mean, that would freak me out if I was a Browns fan.
Absolutely. And look, it's funny, I think Baker's now in a similar situation as like Deshaun Watson's in Houston. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Baker's a bad athlete. And by the same token, I don't think Deshaun Watson is an elite athlete. I think he's a very good athlete. Deshaun Watson just has that knack for just navigating the chaos and keeping his eyes off field. Baker's reaction to this pressure has been just drifting back. And he's got arm talent, but he doesn't have like Mahomes, Allen arm talent. It's just... it's not working. It's not working what they're doing right now. And you're absolutely right. The only way you can work around this is getting the ball out of his hand quicker.
Yeah. And it's almost, you know, after that Jets game, in New York, I was there, and, you know, he had said a million times, I'm not taking enough of these checkdowns. And if you rewatch that game, there's probably four or five plays a game that he tries to maximize and ends up either killing drives, throwing picks, or something like that. It really comes down to four or five plays that are messing them up every week. Part of that is on him, but I think part of that is on Kitchens, where if you only have one intermediate option for him, you know your quarterback. He's always going to try to go bigger. He's always going to try to go longer. You've all those receivers you have to pacify, but I think he just needs to make it easier on him, you know?
The Seahawks offense, they're clicking nicely.
Yeah.
We kind of wondered, you know, Russell Wilson with no Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett taking on some more slot duties, and DK Metcalf. And if you've seen the next gen stats sort of diagram of DK Metcalf's routes this year, it's actually pretty awesome. It's just he just lines up on the left side and just runs upfield,
which is exactly what he did in college.
Yep.
It's like a quarterback. It's not a secret. You use the guys how they're comfortable being used, you know.
But they're doing some neat things with some of these downfield play designs, and obviously Russell is absolutely clicking, and he continues to be. I keep on wondering, like, when you hit as many downfield throws as he does against covered receivers, this isn't like the old Alex Smith to Tyreek Hill when he's running 20 yards behind the defense. He is dropping passes in, and there is not much margin for error on these absolutely perfect downfield throws. And I keep on wondering, like, you know, at some point he's just going to be a little bit off one season or something, and it's going to be like total collapse. But clearly, we have not reached that point.
Gary, let me ask you, who is the only MMQB staffer to pick Russell Wilson to be the MVP of the league this season?
Oh God! I hope it was me.
No, you're talking to him, man. That's it. This is my guy.
Did you have him? Did you have them winning the Super Bowl?
I also have them winning the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I had the Panthers winning the Super Bowl last year, so take that. take that for what it's worth. But yeah, I mean, I do think that we're going to see, and he typically does have a regression, right? At some point, he's not one of those perfect pole-to-pole quarterbacks, you know. And I don't think a lot of quarterbacks are. But he's getting much better at defending his body, I think, and he's getting much better at keeping himself fresh throughout the season. But you're right. I mean, those throws are not to chance. I mean, they're perfect throws. If you looked at that that Tyler Lockett touchdown last week in the back of the end zone, that, like, ridiculous touchdown. Or was that 2 weeks ago?
Yep.
That he threw?
It was Thursday night, it feels like 2 weeks ago.
I mean, that was... You know, that's an example of what he can do and how accurate he is. But I do think that we're going to see him specifically kind of come back to earth a little bit.
Yeah.
But his dip is not as great as some other quarterbacks' kind of regression period during the season.
We do. I mean, it's funny that Lockett throw is like a perfect example. It's like, well, that's just got to be luck, right? And then when he does it,
you know, again,
just time and time again, yeah. It's like, all right, I guess you can bank on this to an extent. You are right, though. They typically hit a valley at some point most seasons. I remember 2 years ago, they were just brutal in December of 2017. They ended up being one of the worst offenses in football down the stretch there when they missed the playoffs. But, man, it's working right now, and they have some route designs that are Brian Schottenheimer's doing some creative things with the way they're attacking some of these zone defenses. So we'll see what they can get going against the Browns here. We are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. We got some Kirk Cousins to talk, and plenty of other games.
Oh baby.
All right, Eagles at Vikings coming up in just a minute, but I do just want to let listeners know you might have been waiting for the arrival of someone else, a certain other host. Don't count it out for the future. I don't know what's going to happen, but this person might be back. I'll just leave it at that because, I don't want to get ahead of myself. Let's go Eagles at Vikings here. This one, to me, is going to be a very good litmus test for Kirk Cousins, or at least as good a litmus test as you can have for a guy who seems to alternate between pretty good starting quarterback and, you know, worst starting quarterback in the NFL from week to week. But this is an injury-ravaged Eagles secondary, going against what we all know is one of the best receiver tandems in football. And we saw what Aaron Rodgers did to them on that Thursday night game. They can roll up some passing yards in this game. And I just think Kirk Cousins has, you know, in their own building, Kirk Cousins has to have a big night here.
Yeah, I thought last week was really healthy for them, you know, and, you know, it was the first time that I saw the Vikings offense, you know, just emotionally on the same page. You know, everyone was having a good time, and you need to, as much as everyone says it's so overrated to pacify your targets, your top two or your top three receivers, Kirk Cousins needs to do a better job of that. You know, he needed to handle that whole situation better than he did. But getting Adam Thielen involved like he did, you know, obviously when you play the Giants, it's sort of like a gift for your number one wide receiver to be matched up the way that he typically is matched up there. It's a pretty winnable battle for them, but yeah, this is going to be sort of a different test, but sort of the same kind of deal too, where there's going to be yards to get picked up there. Mike Zimmer can give them the green light to open up the offense, and because you have to establish something beyond Dalvin Cook, because we've seen time and time again these teams that ride too long on feature backs end up regretting it in November and December when they're a shell of themselves from what they were at the beginning of the season. And even that can happen to Dalvin Cook too, as phenomenal as he's been this year.
Yeah, Dalvin Cook's been great, and on top of that, this Eagles pass rush is not quite what it has been in recent years, so I feel like the Vikings can handle them relatively. Obviously, that Vikings offensive line is still not very good, but I don't think this is the kind of game where Philadelphia's pass rush just takes over, and I just keep on looking at Kirk Cousins and wondering. He has these stretches like he had to start the year where he is just terrible. And a lot of times they've showed up in like November, December. And I just kind of wonder, was this his slump? Did he just happen to get it in September this year and now it's out of his system? Or on top of that, I mean, look, they went to Chicago and got it handed to him. But so do a lot of teams. A lot of offenses look bad when they go to Soldier Field.
I know no one cares about my fantasy football team, but I I pretended I was Paul D. Podesta when I picked him in like the 12th round of my league this year and did not take a quarterback at all. And then I was like, quarterbacks don't matter. I understand the market inefficiency. And then he was so bad through the beginning of the season. It was just kind of eye opening there. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that maybe there's a chance that the slump is over and that he's sort of working his way out of it. And it seems like there's that cataclysmic breaking point between Mike Zimmer and his offensive coordinator every season. And again, if they get that out of the way now, there's no telling what heights they could reach, because normally he starts trying to fire people in around Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So we're already getting close. So,
Yeah. Let's go to the kind of sad Sunday nighter. Our jobs here are to sort of lift people up and get them excited about football.
Yeah.
I don't know about this Sunday nighter. This is Steelers at Chargers. So only is it two teams kind of a bummer right now, but you played it in the biggest bummer of a stadium in the NFL, the soccer field out in StubHub Center. But it's the Delvin Hodges show now for the Steelers, and I would assume we would see a lot of the same. The one silver lining with what's going on with the Steelers this year, losing Roethlisberger and having to play these quarterbacks who are just not at NFL starter level at this point, is they have had to get creative after years of just saying, let's line it up, 3-by-1, 11 personnel, and Ben just sort of throwing to contested catch Antonio Brown, contested catch Juju Smith-Schuster, contested catch Martavis Bryant, Le'Veon Bell, et cetera, et cetera. We've seen them mix in some Wildcat. I'm not enthusiastic about that. I thought it was neat when they rolled it out in the Monday night game against the Bengals that they won. I don't think it's sustainable. Jalen Samuels threw an interception out of it last week, and that's especially problematic. But they're going to have to come up with some new stuff here with Delvin Hodges.
The Wildcat, when you're hurting on offense, is like the equivalent of like the divorced dad getting an earring, you know? It's just like, see, I'm trying,
yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
Look, we're trying. We're trying to do something different. I mean, the Jets did it against the Patriots a few weeks ago, and I remember the announcer said, see, this is exactly what Bill Belichick has to be worried about. And Bill Belichick was on the sidelines looking like he was so bored. Like, this is exactly what we knew that they were going to do. Of course you're going to run the Wildcat, you know? You don't have anybody else, but... Dalvin Hodges, very excited about this. Nickname is Duck. He's a renowned duck caller. That's like his thing off the field.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is rough. I mean, it's so weird because the Chargers offense has been so fun at various points in the, do you remember last year, like that Chiefs game when they're competing for the division title and they're doing all this crazy stuff with Mike Williams?
Yeah.
And then never again. We never saw any of it again. And it's just been so monotonous. And I'm ready for a little bit of life, but I don't think we're going to get that in this game.
The one thing I'll say about the Chargers here, and I was one of the things I obsess over every year are the red zone numbers, because there is just no pattern to who's good in the red zone offensively or defensively year to year. And as much as, I've looked at it historically and been like, well, the Patriots must rank high every year, and they just don't.
Yeah.
Or like the Saints must be really good, and you'll get like, oh, they were third, they were fourth, and they were like 29th 1 year. It just doesn't really make sense. But right now, the Chargers are ahead of only the Dolphins as far as red zone performance goes, and you just kind of wonder. They're 4 points per game almost under what you would expect for a league average red zone offense and defense, and that is 31st. And part of it, I think, is just some tough luck.
Yeah, but it's weird, though, because they, even despite all the injuries, they seem to have the pieces and obviously the quarterback to make things work in a low to medium range setting, right? Even when something condenses, that's why you have someone like Philip Rivers. But it's a mystery.
Yeah. Let's
just
go
a bad
out.
Game,
and
Gary.
Let's go Jets Cowboys because because there's optimism.
Yeah.
The Jets still have no CJ Mosley on the defensive side of the ball. However, the Jets get Sam Darnold back. It looks like spleen not so bloated, which is good news for everyone. He'll have to be careful about who he's smooching these days. But Sam Darnold returns, and look, I am a huge Adam Gase apologist. I will continue to be so.
Hard
same. Until he's, I don't know, out of the league and coaching the XFL or whatever ends up being next. But my issue with Adam Gase, my biggest criticism of him, has been a lack of aggression as a play caller. I think it was appropriate in Miami when your quarterbacks are, you're rotating in Tannehill, Matt Moore, Brock Osweiler, and some of your other favorites, but they couldn't play with Luke Falk. And I know a lot of people were looking at the Jets and saying, like, oh, look at the Jaguars have Gardner Minshew, and look at what this team's doing with their backup. Luke Falk was their third quarterback. He is the backup to a backup, and he's the backup to a backup for a reason. It's because he physically does not have the talent to really play in the NFL. He is a guy for the quarterback's room, and he is a fine fella that they like, but he is not a guy who is suited to play quarterback in the NFL, and that's why they stunk. Sam Darnold is back. Sam Darnold can play aggressively. I know he was shaky in the Buffalo game, but he just missed on a couple of downfield throws, and I thought they were very close to putting up like 20-something points against that Bills defense. I'm still bullish on the Jets offense once they have everything in place. The defense I worry about, but I do think they have a chance to sort of show what they were supposed to be this week in Dallas.
I totally agree, and I think that it's interesting because I made the argument recently that I think we know less about Sam Darnold than we do any of the quarterbacks from that potentially generational 2018 class, right? He had the 13 starts in what was a decrepit, failing offense last year that I think everybody knew, even inside the building, that thing was just doomed from the beginning. You had that electric game against the Lions where you let him throw deep, right? You let him go deep, you let him mix up the play calls, and he was dropping dimes everywhere, and then you just completely packed it in, and you called the most predictable games for 13 of his starts last season. Adam Gase needs to learn from that, and I think that he's actually taken the time to get to know Sam Darnold, to develop with him, and now we're going to finally get to see it. And this Cowboys game might not be the best example where you get a good Cowboys team coming off of a bad loss to Green Bay, but if you look at the remaining schedule there, I think this is going to be a fun end of season for Jets fans, right? You're not going to make the playoffs. Only one 0-4 team in NFL history has made the playoffs. But you get the Dolphins twice. You get Washington. You get Cincinnati. You get Oakland at the end of the season when half the team's going to be suspended. So who knows who's going to even be on that team. You get Pittsburgh at the end of the year. Like,
yep.
They could end up winning like six of their last whatever, five or six of their last whatever games, and actually putting together some, stacking together some quality wins, almost like the Browns did last year heading into this season.
Yeah, it's, and I should mention, still no CJ Mosley. So that defense, they've been out there for a long time this year. This is a chance for the Cowboys, who I think have been really close to clicking or I should say they were really close last week. I thought they were too conservative in the loss to the Saints, but you know, I thought they had they were a couple plays away from a much better day against the Packers last week. And I should also mention, I mean, Adam Gase's guy, he loves those sort of Y ISO looks, the tight end as the single receiver in a 3-by-1 set. Mm-hmm. Chris Herndon just came back, and now he's got a hamstring injury, so we'll see if he plays.
But, he also has mono.
Yes. It's a lot of bad choices there in the Jets locker room. But yeah, they and I guess at this point I'm just really guarding myself against another disastrous performance by this Jets offense. But it's gonna be good. Just be patient.
On the Cowboys side, you know what? If I'm a Cowboys fan, what freaks me out a little bit is if you heard some of the players talking after the Saints game, like, you know, how did you finally pick up on this Kellen Moore offense? And it was so quick and so obvious. They're like, we just watched a bunch of Boise State. And they're like, that's the offense. And all of a sudden, I think if I'm Jerry Jones, if I'm Dak Prescott, I'm like, oh boy. Like, you know, they know where everything's coming from now. It's not like you had this advantage where he was a play caller with no tendencies, but at least now you have an idea of where the plays are coming from, or at least the concepts are coming from. And all of a sudden, it's got to be like, oh boy, like this, we might be in for a little bit of a regression here.
It's going to be good. The counters are coming, and now you have a chance to counter the counters. And like I said, that Packers game, I mean, if Dak Prescott hits that one downfield throw to Amari Cooper,
true,
who is open, yeah, and it's just, you know, it's a foot behind him, it turns into an interception. He got beat on another pick, and that's just the way it goes sometimes. But I didn't think they were far away from having a decent day against a really good Packers defense. And we'll see. This is their chance to get it clicking again. I don't know about Greg Williams, man. We'll see what happens with this Jets defense. They have some pieces, but obviously also not having CJ Mosley, who's sort of the nerve center or was supposed to be the nerve center of this defense. That's another thing you got to deal with.
Yeah.
Let's go Texans Chiefs, and let's just completely freak out about the Chiefs offense for a few minutes though, because it's over. I mean, quarterback controversy. Do they still have Chad Henne on the roster? Do you put him out there? But no, the one thing I will say I worry about, I worry about Patrick Mahomes' ankle, because
yeah,
obviously it did affect his ability to deliver those second reaction plays that he is so exceptional at. But you know, you look at it last year, even if you took the second reaction stuff away, he was still a phenomenal quarterback. He's still an elite quarterback, even without the just the eye-popping stuff he does. That offensive line, though, they didn't look good at home against a Colts front four that really, the Colts didn't even have to blitz much in the second half.
Yeah.
And that's worrisome because that line's been really good for a long time. That Colts pass rush is not a bunch of world beaters. Maybe Justin Houston was a little bit juiced up for the homecoming and whatnot. If you believe in that sort of thing, he willed himself to an all pro type performance. You worry about it, though. I mean, that's going to be an issue.
I think this was a good game for them because I think as good as Patrick Mahomes has been, I think one thing that you've sort of, one of the, like the whispers that you've heard about him is that wait until he gets a handle on protections and calling his own protections and adjusting mm-hmm. things at the line, how much better he's going to be. And I think that he's so talented and his receiving core is so good that he hasn't really had to dig in. And I'm not saying that he's not capable of learning it or that he's not good at it. I think he's already probably more than adequate at calling his own protections and setting that kind of stuff up. But I think this Colts game is a good one, as in the ankle injury too, to say, okay, I need to take care of myself a little bit here too. You know, I need to adjust things a little bit. And I, you know, I could totally see in the game plan you underestimating, you know, a 30 plus. What is Justin Houston? Is he 30? I think he's 30.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Totally, you know, underestimating like a juiced up 30-year-old Justin Houston who is going to give you problems that in one-on-one matchups you didn't think you were going to get. But to me, if I'm a Chiefs fan, I'm at least, or if I'm the Chiefs, I'm a little more worried about the fact that it used to be that cover three defense that used to stop you because it you know, it's one of those things that can kind of counter some of this stuff. But without Tyreek Hill, people can play man on you now, which is scary, right? I mean, I think the Colts were playing man 75% of the time against the Chiefs, which was almost quadruple any other team's man rate against them in like three seasons. And until Tyreek Hill's back, they're going to see a lot more of that, I bet, too.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill. And look, they were supposed to have Sammy Watkins in that Colts game, yep. and technically they did. He immediately left. And you also just kind of wonder, that Texan secondary, you know, they play that sort of cover four stuff, and you can do some neat wrinkles out of it, and that's kind of how they get by, but just talent-wise, it's just not a good unit, and they've certainly been susceptible in the past, so... This will be good. This is one that can go a lot of different ways, and you know, you factor in on the other side of the ball, Deshaun Watson and sort of the blow up factor there against the Chiefs pass rush that should be better and I think will be better than what you've seen so far. Even if you know, we'll see what Chris Jones's status is for this one, but
I just hope Deshaun Watson keeps. You know, it's going to be less cool every time he does it, but it's been two games in a row that he's explained coverages to reporters, which is good. It's helpful.
It's very polite of him.
Yeah, it's a base, you know, kind of understanding, you know, of, hey, well, this is great. It helps with my game story because now I know. But it might become a thing, which is not cool, but I would like to see, I'd like to hear him break down a little Steve Spagnuolo, you know?
Yeah.
It'd be good.
Absolutely. And by the way, no Chris Jones for this one. Yeah. I should correct myself, though. He's just not going to play.
That's his choice.
Yes. I don't know. I guess when you completely shred your groin in a game, that's you got to sit out for a little bit.
Them's the breaks.
That's life. That's why you miss podcasts sometimes, and that's why you miss NFL football games.
That's right.
Panthers, Bucks. This Jameis, you know, and whatever, we've talked about Kyle Allen plenty on these shows, and we're going to skip him for at least one show, but this Jameis Arians marriage, five games in, it's working. It's going well. It's not, you know, bad Jameis, you know, rises up every once in a while, but it really hasn't been problematic this year. And I know last week in New Orleans was disappointing because it was kind of like, okay, this is a team that they can put some points up on. I think the Saints sort of surprised them on the offensive side of the ball by being a little more aggressive downfield. But it was also a matter of Marshawn Lattimore took Mike Evans out of the game. Just like a week before that, he had taken Amari Cooper out of the game. And what do you do after that? And you know, you can only do so much with your best player neutralized. So I think taking all that into consideration, I think it's been an incredibly encouraging first third of the season here for Jameis.
Yeah, but like we talked about with Russell Wilson, I do think that there's a hard dip coming there. Some of his contested touchdown throws this season have been cringeworthy. And I got into a lot of flack for saying that after the Rams game, that there was probably two of the 90 passing touchdowns there were egregiously bad throws that I think would have been picked off under any other circumstances. And, you know, I just think he's not consistent, and I don't know. I mean, I think that obviously Bruce Arians, the play design, the offense, and Byron Leftwich, I think, is doing himself a lot of favors as a play caller early in the season. But I do think that there's a regression coming there, too, and it just makes me... We haven't had that total Jameis spiral game yet, but I'm guessing like the 4 or 5 interception game, but that's coming, too, right? That's something we kind of got to factor in here, you know?
It could be right around the corner. It'll be a good one, though. That's I mean, look, that Panthers defense is quietly sort of putting itself back in the elite conversation here this season, and it's a nice test for the Bucks out in... that's a London one.
Yeah, and Christian McCaffrey might be the most fun player to watch in football right now. He's just unbelievable, you know?
He is, and really, I said we wouldn't get into Kyle Allen stuff, but we'll get into it for a second. I still insist, look, Kyle Allen's better than Cam at 70% or whatever percent Cam was. I guess the medical community will get together and decide on the exact number, but... if Cam gets back to 90-95%, because he's never going to be 2015 Cam. It's just that's life. We all age and we become less of ourselves physically of what we were. But Cam at 90%, I want him in there over Kyle Allen. And I know they haven't lost a game with Kyle Allen, and he's got the little Garoppolo-esque start to his career, but this has been a whole lot of Christian McCaffrey, and it's getting to the point where you just say Kyle Allen's got to clean up the ball security issues, which you saw last week he did so, and that's what they're going to rely on right now.
Christian McCaffrey needs to hold out like this week and just wait to get paid. I mean, he's carrying everything, and I agree with you, although I do think that you saying that has immediately made you the least most popular person in Carolina right now, because they love them some Kyle Allen. I mean, that is they're behind Kyle Allen. That's a Kyle Allen state, or pair of states down there.
That's a new nickname. Put it on the license plate. But I like the guy. It's a great story, and I think he's going to be in the NFL for like 15 years.
Sure.
But which is not something you would have said, you know, after he goes undrafted in 2018. And it still remains completely bizarre to me that they spent that third round pick on Will Greer. Not that I'm necessarily down on Will Greer. We have no idea what Will Greer is going to be. But, I mean, you talk about sort of a luxury pick when you could have just taken, I don't know, anyone else. Yeah. At any position.
Offensive line help, receiver. Yeah, any of those things. Yeah.
Yep. Let's go Bengals-Ravens here. And it would seem to be something of a bounce-back opportunity here for Lamar Jackson. It's a Bengals defense that just isn't great on the back seven. Frankly, it's maybe not great anywhere. You have a dynamic player in Colin Dunlap, but that's kind of about it there. Lamar has struggled the past 2 weeks, had a rough time in that Steelers game. That's always a tough environment, but goes home, gets his Bengals team. It seems like an opportunity to sort of get things back on track here.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I don't know necessarily what it was, but to get the offense back to its base functionality, which is a, you know, sort of a high wire triple option look where teams have to prepare for two or three guys to run the ball on every play. And I'm not minimizing Lamar Jackson to that role, but I think that's what makes a lot of the other looks that he has more advantageous. And, you know, he can drop it anywhere he wants in the field, but I think it's about just making him more comfortable and getting his receivers more wide open. But I would expect this one to be a little bit of a beatdown. I think we're all quietly being prepared for the trade deadline purge here in Cincinnati. I think it's more or less inevitable, and it's one of those things where the team is like, oh, we're never going to do that, but they're kind of just pushing it out there so that people don't get freaked out when all of a sudden everybody just starts getting dealt here at the last minute.
You can't have any of our offensive linemen. Don't even ask. They got some corners there. They can get a nice return on some of those guys. Maybe the Eagles check in on a Dre Kirkpatrick type guy. But
how crazy is it going to be that the Patriots are going to have Stephon Diggs and AJ Green for the Super Bowl this year? Like, that's going to be nuts.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they flip one of them for, I don't know, just for fun. I think
they flip one of them for, like, you know, Nick Chubb. You know,
yeah. Or maybe you get them both and then just continue to play Philip Dorsett. Just be like,
I'm much improved Philip Dorsett, by the way.
Philip Dorsett's a fine player.
He's having a good season.
He is.
And their wide receivers coach is their special teams coordinator. Like, that whole situation is amazing to me. But good for Philip Dorsett. He was excited about this offense going into this year. He thought he was going to have a big year. I think he's doing okay.
I know. I like the fact that Bill Belichick is sort of sticking to his guns on the, you know, he said in the past, I believe it was on Paul Rabel's. Is that how you say the lacrosse guy, Paul Rabel?
This is going to expose me too, because I've always talked myself up as a big lax guy. I'm actually staring
We're both Syracuse guys, and we should be lax guys.
2010 lacrosse championship when they beat Cornell right before overtime, and then Cody Jamison won it in overtime. Probably the greatest sporting event that I've ever been to at Foxborough Stadium.
I attended one lacrosse game in my entire college career, and that was it, and I never covered it.
You whiffed on the whole thing, too, because you were there during the Airgate revolution, right?
Sounds familiar.
The guy who, I mean, like, arguably the greatest lacrosse player in college lacrosse history, he used to dunk it, he used to go behind the goal and dunk it backwards on, you know what I mean? Like, dunk it over the goal into the net, and the move was so effective that they banned it from lacrosse. Like, he's...
I do know Gary Gate.
Yeah.
I'll say that, but, one of the good Garys, but, no.
What an end to this podcast. Who would have thought it would have delved into some deep lax talk there?
I was going to say, check out our well, we got to come up with a name for our lax podcast now, but
the face
everyone's going to be demanding it. But Belichick, the entire point, what led us to this lax tangent was Belichick had told Paul Rabil on his podcast, he was talking about how he really likes to have fewer coaches. He wants to have fewer coaches and each coach take on more responsibility. And sort of that's, he thinks that's the effective way to have a coaching staff. And he is really subscribed to that philosophy this season.
He's got like the special teams coordinator is also like the defensive coordinator slash general manager slash stadium ops.
It's soon just going to be him and Steve. And that's about it. Maybe Gerard Mayo can stick around.
Brett Bielema, baby.
Ooh, yeah, that's right. I forgot he was there.
Sneaky head coaching candidate in 2020.
He was going to be defensive coordinator. And then they were like, nah, Schiano. And then they were like,
nobody.
How about nobody? we actually have four games left here, starting with Falcons, Cardinals. And I don't know, this Falcons defense. We knew it was going to be down without Keanu Neal. This is ridiculous, though, and that pass rush that had shown signs of life early in the year. I look back at that Week 2 game against the Eagles, and it's like that team is almost unrecognizable. It was like that night. It was like, man, this pass rush is starting to cook a little bit, and they're doing it against this great Eagles line. And there are so many sort of underlying things you'd look at from this victory and be like, you know what, this is it. This is where it starts to click for the Falcons, and then it just sort of went away. And then Keanu Neal goes down, and now we're sitting here just thinking this might be the worst defense in football.
Do you know how many years in a row I've wanted to write, like, the finally, like, the Tack McKinley and Vic Beasley machine is rolling? Like, I think I've got, like, 8 saved drafts of that same story that I've wanted to write. But the game against Houston was embarrassing, and it's so uncharacteristic of a Dan Quinn team to have mental breakdowns or communication breakdowns in coverage. This is not rocket science, and they're being, you know, fooled and turned around by, a very talented but sort of multi or single dimensional wide receiver, like a guy like Will Fuller. And you know what he's going to do to your defense, and he's still ripping you guys apart. And, you know, I was very, very surprised to see the nature of some of the breakdowns. It's not a Dan Quinn defense, you know?
It's brutal. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury's got to be licking his chops. I don't know how diverse that Cardinals or how expansive that Cardinals offense can get at this point, but this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for a little air show here in Arizona, and we'll see. We'll see if they deliver.
They have a sneaky soft spot in their schedule, too, the Cardinals. I think they can they can make a run here.
They can, I don't know if I call it a run, but they can sort of, look, if we got to December and the Cardinals were sitting there like 5-8 or something, we'd be like, okay, here we go. It's some good progress. We're on the right track here. I don't know if they can get there, but they got a chance to.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just think coming up, you know, you have the Falcons and the Giants. Both teams that I don't think are markedly better than they are, and they could be 3-3-1, right? If my memory serves me correctly, 3-3-1. That to me is a win for Cliff Kingsbury. Would anybody have thought he would have been 500 through 7 games this season? I think that's pretty good.
I forgot they had that tie.
That's right.
So I guess it'd be like 5-7-1 or something. 4-8-1.
Yeah.
That. Let's see, Falcons, Saints at Jaguars here. I guess the question is, and look, I don't want to overstate this. The you know, Teddy Bridgewater didn't look like Patrick Mahomes last week against Tampa, but Tampa sort of dared them a couple times to get aggressive downfield, and the Saints took it, and they were successful with it. So, obviously, you got a shorthanded Jaguars secondary. I just kind of wonder if we see more of that from Bridgewater and this offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be, as much as he was able to expand, I think this is one of those games where Sean Payton tries to get cute a little bit. I mean, he was so diverse offensively against the Seahawks. And I think that's maybe more what we're going to see is a lot of window dressing in the backfield. Jacksonville's got a lot of young players, a lot of linebackers that maybe kind of overcommit sometimes. So I think that that's going to be part of their strategy going in. But who knows? I mean, I've been wrong about this team since Drew Brees went down. He's done a phenomenal job sort of feeling out Teddy Bridgewater, and there's a reason that, you know, Teddy Bridgewater chose to come back there, thankfully for him, instead of going to Miami. I mean, my God.
Mm-hmm. Jeez. It really would have been sad.
Yeah, so sad.
Poor guy would have been severely injured again behind that Dolphins line. Titans at Broncos. I guess I'm just curious to see if the Broncos at home can deliver the type of win that they've been so close to delivering, whether it be Chicago or Jacksonville, those two games that got away from them late. Because this, I mean, look, when the Broncos D has really disappointed, it's been when they've just gotten steamrolled. And we saw what Leonard Fournette did to them in the second half of that Jaguars game. And now you got Derrick Henry coming in there and a Titans offense that, you know, they're probably not going to go bombs away on you. I just want to see the Broncos shut down Derrick Henry and sort of win this game 21-13 or something, and then I will personally congratulate Vic Fangio on a podcast next week, and there's no higher honor than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really, I mean, it took him 40 years to become a head coach, but still he waits for Gary's approval.
I
think that's right. I mean, that was the recipe all along, was to play great defense, to let Philip Lindsay get 100 plus total yards, and to win by a touchdown. And you know, it's weird that they've been kind of gouged out of some of those games as much as they have this season, but I don't know, I have a good feeling about them. I have a feeling that they're going to kind of right the ship here in the second half of the season. That was a good win for them last week, and now that they're back at home, I don't know. I think this is a winnable game. Vic Fangio, Scranton guy. It's big stuff. You know.
There you go. And we should mention, and Robert Klemko and I talked about it on the Monday show. They are playing hard for him, and Von Miller had, you don't see in the stats, they didn't have a sack of Phillip Rivers, but Von Miller just dominated that game when they beat the Chargers the other day. So. More of that. No Bradley Chubb, and they still got plenty of pressure and enough to ruin another team's game plan. So we will finish it with Washington at Miami, and I don't even want to delve deep into this one because no one wants to, but we know the Dolphins are historically bad. We know that's the case. A lot of people are saying this is the one they have circled. Personally, I think maybe Cincinnati coming to town in December might be just as good. But I guess my question to you is, do you put Washington in the same category, historically bad like the Dolphins?
No, they're just typical NFL manufactured idiocy bad, right? I mean, this is just a bad owner who lops veteran talent on top of developing talent and doesn't let anybody get better, and then fires the coaching staff, and somewhere along the line they're going to throw Dwayne Haskins into this mess and ruin his development too. And so I think that's just typical NFL bad. The Dolphins were, whoa, this tank is getting out of control bad, you know, which I think is an exciting new kind of bad.
Yeah, it's funny, like, if Washington goes down there, even with the interim coach and even with all the turmoil there, if they lose this game, I don't know, man. that's just embarrassing.
Who did you pick?
No one should be losing this Dolphins team.
Who did you pick in our staff picks?
I picked, and I do against the spread, so I have Washington -3.5 was the line, and I picked Washington.
I picked Washington, too, and it was weird because I was like, oh, yeah. Case Keenum, you know, but like, why did that? Why was that a thought in my head?
I know,
you know. Oh, Case Keenum's back. Everything's gonna be fine. Obviously, you know.
It's I don't know. I don't even know if it's the lesser of the three evils there, but it's different. It's a change, And that feels good for some reason.
Something.
It really is something. This is a game for hipsters. So many people will watch this ironically.
Raise his hand quietly. I'm interested. I think it's gonna be just a total you know what show, and I'm here for that.
You're gonna break out your PBRs and your trucker hat. I don't know how hipsters dress anymore. I just remember the hipsters from the early 2000s.
I do have Those a trucker hat. I drink better beer though.
Yeah.
That's about it though. You have, I would say, the two of us, what I know about your drinking habit, you have a more hipster drinking habit than I do.
Yeah, a little bit. I just sort of drink what I always drank, I guess is the point.
Yeah, but then just kind of based on the timing and the eras, like what you're drinking now is ironic in a sort of way. What you've always drank is somewhat ironic now.
Yeah, I drink a lot of Jim Beam.
Right.
It went horribly when I had Robert Klemko over to my home. And he brought really good bourbon, which doesn't go down like, Jim Beam does. I won't say anything rude about Jim Beam, but you can't drink a lot of Jim Beam for that reason.
There's a built-in warning mechanism on Jim Beam.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like your body just kind of says, before you can really get into trouble, your body says like, whoa,
oh, no.
Whoa,
yeah.
Whoa, nope. This is not meant for consumption. Or mass consumption, I should say. But he brought really good, smooth stuff, and it went horribly. And I have never been that intoxicated in front of my children. And they didn't notice, and they went to bed before it got really bad. But yeah, it's the way it goes.
You admitting that is just, we'll have to scrub all records of this podcast when they get older.
I know. Well, scrub that, and then possibly scrub my defense of Adam Gase stuff. So it might really work out here. With that, we're gonna wrap this thing up. The MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB podcast. And apologies to Delvin Hodges because his name is actually Devlin. Right? We both said that wrong, Connor.
Yeah. We'll just call him Duck next week. Sorry, man.
It's Duck. It's absolutely Duck. But I can't wrap my head around the Devlin quite yet. I just see it, and I transpose those numbers, those letters naturally there. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.